Good morning, Nick Beggs.
How are you?
Good. How are you today?
Not too bad at all.
Well, thanks for taking time to talk to progarchy.com. We really appreciate it. Well, there are three things I'd like to ask you about this morning. The first is your tour with Stephen Wilson that's coming up, your work with Stephen.
Yes.
And next, I'd like to talk to you about your new album, From the New Gods.
Sure.
And then finish off talking about Nick Beggs and the future of music.
Okay.
Well, first off, you're coming back to Canada. I'm calling you from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Okay.
And I saw you last year. You came to visit us, I think it was in June or July. Is that right?
That sounds about right, yes. We come back there on Sunday. We're flying back to Canada, to Montreal.
Yeah, this time you're starting not in the West.
Yeah.
But in the East. And then I think you got some dates in the U.S.?
Yeah, that's right. We go down to the States for a week, and then we go on to South America for another week.
Fabulous. Well, you guys do a great show. I recommend it to everyone.
Thank you.
What are you hoping for from this tour? What do you like best about touring with Stephen Wilson?
It's always very uplifting and challenging and rewarding because the audiences seem to respond so well. And it's a great bunch of guys. We're all good friends within the band. We like the music a lot. I get a chance to see a lot of places I've been to before, but revisit a lot of places that I like to go to. So, you know, it's a win-win scenario, really.
So you've worked on multiple albums with Stephen Wilson.
Yes.
Some people call him Mr. Prog. I remember at the show in Vancouver, he introduced you as Nick Blonde Bombshell Beggs. Now, does everyone call you that or just Stephen?
He calls me lots of things.
So he might have a new name for you on this tour.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he will. Yeah, he has many names for me. Yeah, that's right, he does. But he calls everybody different things too, you know. He calls me Sir Nicholas quite a lot.
Oh, that's nice. I like that.
I don't know where the peerage came from, but, you know.
Well, Sir Nicholas, let me ask you about Prog. Although some people call Stephen Mr. Prog, he doesn't like that word Prog.
No, he doesn't like it at all, and he doesn't consider himself to be that person. So I coined a phrase for him, and that is epige. He is an exponent of the genre of epige, which is experimental progressive industrial jazz.
Experimental progressive industrial jazz.
That's
well, how
right.
about you? Do you think of yourself as a prog rock musician, or as
no.
an epige musician, or just a musician?
Well, I'm a musician. I played for 32 years as a musician, and I've only really been, although I love progressive music, and the classic progressive bands of the 70s were really my, they helped focus my desires for the long term, shall we say. But, you know, I really started off the bulk of my career playing pop music. It's only more in the past 10 years that I've started to have an opportunity to play with many of my heroes and to dip my toe into that vast ocean. But I don't consider myself to be a progressive artist. I consider myself to be a musician and a songwriter and a performer. And for whoever will ask me in any idiom if they would like me to. And that's the way I tend to work, to be honest.
And look at the company you keep. Steve Hackett, Stephen Wilson. If anyone has a claim to being a progressive rock musician, it's got to be Nick Beggs.
Yeah, but I also work with Kim Wilde, and I've toured with Right Said Fred. I was in ABC for 5 years. I've been musical director for Belinda Carlisle, also Toya Wilcox. I worked with Seal for a short period of time. I've worked with a lot of pop artists. And then, of course, my, you know, where I started, which is an archetypal 80s pop band. So I think people could be forgiven for seeing me as a progressive artist more recently, but I'm still playing many different types of music, and I'm happy to do that. I think it's either, if you're going to play more complicated music, the spectrum will lead you into either jazz or progressive music or fusion. There's not really much of a call for rock musicians to play classical music, although it does happen from time to time, and I love classical music. I guess it's people will draw their own conclusions, irrespective of what I think anyway. So,
what do you think progressive means? Does it mean music that is approaching the complexity of classical music, or approaching jazz, as you suggest?
I don't see it as a genre. I see it as a headspace. I think it represents a liberated mind.
Nice.
Somebody who is prepared to cut down boundaries.
Nice.
You know, there's a lot of rules in music. I mean, even in scoring, for instance, you're not supposed to use parallel fifths in orchestrating, because they're just supposed to be they don't sound right, they're a bit uncouth. But there's a place to use parallel fifths, and I think Prince is an archetypal progressive artist. I think Prince probably is one of the greatest artists that ever graced the planet, and he embodies everything that progressive rock is, but with a really funky mainstream and pop soulful overview. And I think he's as much of a progressive artist as of any of the greats.
Yeah, and you've compared him to Steven Wilson.
I think Steven Wilson would be very happy to be compared to Prince. I think Stephen is a massive fan of Prince, as am I. And I think he probably is the greatest artist. If I had to pick one, the greatest artist ever would be Prince.
Is he still known as Prince? I thought he changed his name. He was formerly known as Prince.
I think he's gone back to being Prince. Well, maybe it's just Mr. Prince. I don't know.
Well, speaking of names, I love the name The Mute Gods. Let's talk about the new album.
Okay.
Now, it starts off with the title track, Do Nothing Till You Hear From Me.
Yeah.
Just really amazing song to start off with.
Thank you.
It's funny you mentioned Headspace earlier. The two albums I've been listening to the most these days are The New Headspace and The Mute Gods. Just
okay.
Can't get enough of either one of them.
Oh, that's good. That's good news. Thank you. It's been a, so far, very well-received record.
I've been soaking in the music of the first track. What can you tell me about the lyrics? What is this song about?
Well, of course, the song title was a classic. I think it was a Duke Ellington. Do Nothing Till You Hear From Me. But his song is there's no resemblance or has no other shared territory with my song. But I like the idea, because I'd never heard of that song before. When I came up with the title, Do Nothing Till You Hear From Me, I Googled it, and then I found that Ellington had written a song called Do Nothing To You, which was actually an instrumental, and I didn't have lyrics put to it till much later. And when I listened to this song, I thought, I like the idea of this song representing something naive and from another time. My song represents something much darker and from a modern time, when the world has turned many times and is in a completely different place. And my song is a direct reference to the speeches that Eisenhower gave after the Second World War, when he warned the world about the dangers of the industrial military complex. The song also charts the experiences of a man known as Phil Schneider, who is now dead, but who was a very vocal turncoat. He worked for the government, American government, as a geologist. And he started to expose some of the secrets that the government, the US government, were keeping in these underground military bases. And also, he was charged with working on them and helping to develop them. So his stories come as first hand from a man who saw it happening and who had many attempts on his life made and then eventually died. And it was supposed to be, he was supposed to have committed suicide, but, you know, I say, oh, that's in brackets. He was tempted to be assassinated on numbers of occasions, and eventually they got him. So there you go. That's the background for that song.
Fascinating. So who's speaking to the listener? Who's saying, do nothing till you hear from me?
It's an amalgam. It's me. It's other people who have something to say on this subject. It's other people who know the truth or believe they know the truth, but cannot say anything on the subject until the time is right. But then again, it also works quite neatly and ties up the title of the band quite well, because I like the idea of all these deities sitting around that we've empowered through our history, and we living in times where men of supposed God are taking the actions of religious fundamentalism to heart and speaking out in the name of God.
So praying.
And yet none of these gods are saying or doing anything.
Interesting.
So it works at that level too. The mute gods do nothing till you hear from me. Idea that there is no God. So don't do anything. Don't kill people. Don't act in my name.
So do nothing could be interpreted as meaning non-violence.
It could mean anything that you would ascribe to it, in the same way as any religious text can mean anything that you ascribe to it.
And praying to a mute God, is this an atheist anthem?
I think that the actual viewpoint isn't stipulated. I think what's said through the narrative of that song is, what are you expecting? What's the best that can happen from this situation when you don't take responsibility for your own life and hand up everything to an unresponsive deity? What's the very best you can have? That's why the Middle Eight concludes that the voice of reason is out of season.
Yes. Well, the first two tracks are musically stimulating and intellectually challenging. And then tracks 3, 4, and 5, Night School for Idiots, Feed the Troll, mm-hmm. Your Dark Ideas, mm-hmm. they seem more accessible, as if they're built for the radio. The title tracks, the names of the tracks are arresting. They grab your attention. And you don't forget the titles, because they're repeated often enough during the song. What were you aiming at with three catchy tracks like this? Was this the old A&R man coming out?
I think that in making a record, I think it's very important that you've given a balanced meal to the listener. It's all very well giving fiber and roughage or vitamins, but you need to actually have something that people can remember to sing, something that will stay with them. Those songs tend to come much more from my pop leanings. So, you know, the first two tracks have quite a progressive arrangement, some metal affectations, some irregular meter, and some discordant progressions. Whereas I think actually Feed the Troll has quite a lot of discordant aspect to it, because it's a very psychotic piece.
Yes.
Dark Ideas is a reaction or a song written about the media and the way in which people are prepared to do a kiss and tell story for large amounts of money. So it's an observation written about how people respond to newspapers. Night School for Idiots is an autobiographical song.
Really?
Oh, yes.
You went to night school?
No, it doesn't mean that. What it means is that it's about unrequited love and how I felt once. And when I wrote it, I said to my wife, look, I've written this song about one of my old relationships, and it's a song about how I felt before I met you. Because when you're scoping around for song titles and ideas, subject matter can come out of anywhere. And a good old love song is something that people really tend to respond to. So I thought I had to be honest. I had to write about my own experiences in the arena of love. And so that was a song that I wrote about a relationship that was very important to me and that I had to finish because I, at the time, didn't feel I could give that person what she wanted from me.
Amazing.
So it's when you listen to it, it's an autobiographical song, and the lyrics are very accurate.
So there's incredible depth to these more accessible pop-sounding tracks as well.
Well, I suppose you wouldn't know that unless I told you.
Well, I'm glad you told us. Probably my favorite song on the album, and this has got to be autobiographical, is Father Daughter, the incredible closing track.
Yes, that's totally autobiographical. It's almost an apology to my eldest daughter.
And tell us about the duet on the song.
Well, I've always wanted to work with my eldest girl. She's 24 and she's an incredibly talented singer-songwriter. In fact, she's in LA at the minute working with various writers and musicians. But I said to her, I want you on this record in some form. So I've come up with this idea. I've written a first and third verse. I'd like you to respond to it on the second verse. And I had some suggestions about where I wanted her to sing and what to sing. But I said, lyrically, listen to what I've done and then just write. And don't pull any punches. I want you to really tell me how you feel. And she did.
It's a beautiful song.
Thank you.
If people need to buy this album, I encourage them. This one song is worth it. I mean, everything else is great, but this one song, what a song to finish the album with. And I like, too, how you bring, you're playing stick on that as well, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
It's like it's infused with who Nick Beggs is.
I guess it is, yeah. I mean, my children are pretty endemic to me. After my first marriage broke up, I didn't really do very much for a while. I kind of went into a bit of a depression. And I was so focused on making sure that my daughter had as much time as she could with me. And she was only 2.5 when we ended up, so, you know, we're looking at 22 years ago. But I've managed to maintain a very strong, profound relationship with her. And I guess I'm grateful, but I also wanted to express the truth of that period. And I think that if I, you know, when I decided to make this album or this sequence of records, I made a deal with myself, and that was that I'm going to make sure that I say what I really think and talk from experience and speak on subjects which I not only know about but also have a very strong opinions on. Because some people will expect me to be making a vapid pop album.
Well, I gotta say, Prague listeners, the people who visit progarchy.com for that reason, I have to commend this album to them. It really gets underway, I think, tracks 7, I think it is, In the Crosshairs, a bit of an instrumental, then it sets up for 2 amazing prog tracks, Strange Relationship and Swimming Horses, which are just right up there. I can't get enough of those tracks myself.
Thank you.
What can you tell me about Strange Relationship and Swimming Horses? People who like Stephen Wilson and Genesis and Steve Hackett, you know, there are, you know, flavors of that on this album. They're going to love it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there are flavors of that. Well, Strange Relationship was written as a direct response to me learning the Steve Hackett material for the Genesis Revisited tour, which I just did.
Really? That's great.
Well, I had this double-necked guitar built, a bass. It was a bass and a 12-string. And I was playing around with all these chords because I had to learn to play guitar in 3 months. I'd never played guitar before much. And so when Steve asked me to come in, and I said, look, Steve, I can't play guitar. I've never played guitar live. And he said, listen, you can play the Chapman stick, so therefore you can play the guitar. And he said, if you can't play the tracks, I'll drop the tracks you can't play and we'll do other stuff. And I said, are you kidding? If I can't play Supper's Ready, there'll be a lynching. Somewhere in America, someone will die if we don't play that song. And it'll probably be me. So I had to really, really practice a lot. And during my period of practice on the 12-string and the 6-string guitar, I was discovering all these amazing voicings that Mike Rutherford and Steve Hackett used, and Tony Banks. And I thought, wow, these are resonant chords, and the arpeggios are so beautiful. So I just took the idea of those progressions and I wrote that song, Strange Relationship, because I loved the jangly 12-string guitar in those songs.
Yes, it takes me back to the time of being a teenager, listening to these vinyl albums, hearing Genesis for the first time.
Well, I guess I played the synth solo, the Moog solo, in some very, very protracted Moog solo.
Yes, it's lovely.
And I played that and I thought, if I ask someone else to do that, they'll do an approximation, but I kind of thought I want it to sound like Tony Banks and I want to play it.
Yeah, so there's a Tony Banks feel.
Yeah. Well, I did. So good. I actually wanted it to feel like Tony Banks. I wanted it to sound like him.
That's so good.
But as for material, in terms of lyrics, that song is about other relationships, about how in many cases we don't we think we know the person that we're with, and we can, as time passes, we know them less and less. And also how it's not about in my relationship now. I'm very happily married, and my wife is a wonderful woman and very understanding as well, to let me sort of delve into these past relationships and write so autobiographically about them. But it's about how we try and preempt what the other person's thinking, or about how we sometimes are drawn to relationships we really shouldn't be, and we wonder why we can't pull ourselves away. That's what that song's about.
And it has great lyrics.
Thank you.
Anything else you'd like to tell us about the Mute Gods album?
Well, I was going to tell you about Swimming Horses.
Please do. I love that track.
Which is, Swimming Horses has a veiled ecological message, narrative, and it's about the rising tides and the way in which we are creating it, and that we are going to have to ride these horses or we're going to sink. We're going to drown. And the arrogance of mankind, really, I think, because I'm a very, very radical environmentalist in my thinking. I think we're really heading for a terrible time. And that's another subject that I will be right to continue to write on.
Please do.
Yeah.
People should do nothing till they hear this album. Great work from the Mute Gods. Well, let's finish up. Nick Biggs, tell me, what do you like the most about what you do? Life as a musician.
I think it's very varied. I get bored very quickly, and I don't think I would be able to continue doing anything if I was bored. And so the constant changing of scenery and working with different people and learning new material is very exciting and challenging. I think that would have to come top of the list.
And tell us about the future. If this is what you love the most, what can we expect from the music of Nick Biggs in the future?
Well, I've started writing the next Mute Gods album. I have quite a lot of material, and I see it as a three-album cycle, which will be related, three albums which will be relatively related, and then after that I'll rethink it. In terms of my other musical commitments, I'm going to be touring with Steve Wilson through the summer and the spring. And then I'll be working with Steve Hackett again in the summer. And a band called Fish on Friday, which is a band I've been working with for the past few years. And, who knows? Probably stuff with my daughter as well.
Oh, this is all such good news.
Thank you.
I've got a big smile on my face at this.
Great.
I'm glad to hear that The Mute Gods isn't a one-off and that a trilogy is in the works.
Yes, it will be a 3-album cycle at least.
Prog fans are going to love it. Nick Biggs, thank you so much for taking the time to talk today with progarchy.com.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you. All the best on the tour.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye.